Welcome back to Juno Afternoon. Andy Klein, your host for today. There's Cat Power with Crossbone Style. I thought we'd talk about bones with our next guest here. It's Dr. Charles David Hightower. Doctor, you go by Dave Hightower. Welcome. Thanks so much for coming in.
Thanks so much.
And Dr. Hightower, you're new to Juno. Pretty new, yeah.
I've been coming out for just under a year to work at Bartlett Regional Hospital to help with their orthopedic trauma call intermittently. And before that, I'd help out at the Search Clinic when I was working at Alaska Native Medical Center. And so, but it's been just a couple months and we've been starting I've been starting my own independent orthopedic practice here in town.
So you've moved to town.
Yeah, you know,
I'm liked visiting, and
it's been beautiful. You know, I visited all over the state at Alaska Native, going to different field sites, and kind of fell in love with Juno and the atmosphere, and the people were great, and so it seemed like a good match for me and my family.
Well, cool. Well, we agree.
Oh, hey.
So welcome to town. We're glad to have you. It's always wonderful to have another medical professional in town. I mean, that's terrific for a small, relatively small town like Juno. That's always great. But so that's terrific. So folks can find you if they're interested in orthopedic health, if they've got an issue and that kind of thing. Are you also still affiliated with the one of the hospitals as well, or do you just okay?
I operate over at Bartlett Regional right now, and then sometimes for some specialty type cases, we still are available to do things that we would normally have to send away from Juno. I could do them up in Anchorage with people at Providence Hospital and at Alaska Regional, and there's a surgery center there too. So I can kind of operate at any of the sites, but depending on what the best match for the patient would be.
We're heading into winter, and so as someone who sees a lot of injuries and maybe people not quite easing into winter in the right way, maybe some ideas on, you were saying, winterizing your joints.
Yeah. You know,
Let's talk about that.
One of the things I think is really terrific is that, especially in an area where everyone's very active and they engage in a lot of different winter sports, is what are the different ways that you can prepare your body not only to enjoy the sport right away without that first couple weeks of having trouble or achy muscles and joints, but also to prevent injury that can usually happen in the beginning of the season and then lay you out from the things that you want to do for the rest of the season. So some of the things I think a lot, and I talk to patients a lot about, are you know, for people, for their parents or for people who are getting a little bit older, what do you do about the joint pains and the aches that occur that seem to change with weather, seem to change a lot worse when things get cold and when things get achy, when weather fronts run in and when the fog comes in.
And one of the things that can be, like, sometimes it's humidity, right?
Absolutely.
And a lot of times it's just the cold weather as well.
It's really true. One of the things that's really curious about joints, especially joints that are a little older and start to develop arthritic changes, is the joints act like a barometer. The nerve fibers within the joint, if they get irritated, they can sense pressure changes from knee joint swelling that can be affected by outside pressures, especially weather fronts. And one of the things that's interesting to me is I see a lot of my patients who are in the different phases of arthritis where they're not at the point where they're debilitated by it, but they are certainly slowed down by it. And those people really do feel those changes in weather and temperature quite a bit. And one of the things that's been really effective for them is for patients who can tolerate it, patients who can do well with non-steroidal anti-inflammatories, like things like ibuprofen or Aleve, things in that category, and they don't get stomach irritations or don't have a lot of heart disease. If they can take those things, most people take them usually when they hurt or after they hurt. But one of the things that I've noticed for people is it gets colder. And as we get into getting ready for wintertime activities, taking it before activity, usually with your breakfast in the morning, that could decrease some of the GI upset that happens. But then also warming or getting the joint ready by using either the bean bags that you can put in the microwave and warm them up as a hot pack, or sometimes there's electronic hot packs that you can use. But basically putting them onto the joint and warming that joint up just while you're having your coffee is usually enough time to get you a little bit more mobilized for those first couple steps and that first mile that you're walking that day. And if you're walking your steps on your pedometer, those first steps will go a lot easier if the joint's mobilized, it's warmed up a bit, and that you have a little bit of anti-inflammatory on board. That can help a lot, especially as the winter's settling in.
Now, with that inflammatory, I always hear the liver issues can be a thing. So what do people have to watch if they do decide to get on that sort of a regimen?
Yeah, it's an interesting – if you do know that you have issues with your kidney specifically, things like anti-inflammatories, like the non-steroidals, they're cleared by your kidney mostly. And so for people who have kidney disease, if they're on dialysis or they have other issues with their kidney, certainly talk to their doctor before they start any type of those medicines. Even if they're over-the-counter, you can end up having other issues with GI upset where your stomach is more irritated, or if people have known to have stomach ulcers, those are medicines that you want to be really cautious with. But for people who don't have those troubles, they can be really powerful, especially when taken in bursts. So instead of taking them all the time, every day, if you normally don't need much, but you tend to have wintertime trouble, starting to take it, you know, every day before activity and then after activity. And then, you know, if that course, usually it's just about 2 weeks, will give you a little bit of that extra go ahead where you kind of get yourself ready for winter. And that can help out a lot in terms of not needing people like me and other people.
Yeah,
which is really
right.
Good. Yeah.
Well, speaking of that, what are some of the common things you start seeing in winter beyond just the kind of general joint pain? Like maybe what are some of the common injuries and things like that that you see in winter more often?
Well, there's two big things that we kind of think about in orthopedics about winter injuries. The first one is people like to hang stuff up that are high, and usually it's slippery on the ground. So ladder-related injuries and falls, step-stool-related injuries and falls are a really big deal.
Watch those Christmas lights.
Yeah.
Yeah.
One of the things I've been telling people that when they get to the point where they've ever had a fracture before, I say, find the neighbor kid, you know what I mean? Either put him up on the ladder for you or, like, you know, pay him 10 bucks or whatever you need to put the Christmas lights up, because you really don't want that fall. You're not as bouncy as you used to be. And a fall, sometimes if your bones are weaker, it puts you at risk for spinal compression fractures that could be really bad and set you back in terms of discomfort. It puts you at risk for hip fractures or wrist fractures, which are the most common things I see in the trauma setting in the wintertime.
Wrist. Oh, yeah. Going down on the wrist.
Exactly.
Sure. Yeah.
And
right.
And also, you know, when people are walking on the streets, when we're in between the street services to get them ready, really cautious about the icy patches, or especially when we get that sort of frost on top of the ice where you can't see it. That's where a lot of my ankle fractures come from.
Mm-hmm.
People get big ankle injuries. And the nice things about bony injuries, well, we can fix them. The body heals really wonderfully even without us fixing them. Sometimes we could do well without a surgery, but they can be a really big setback. And
yeah.
Then using crutches and walkers in the winter, it's just not
right.
The greatest thing in the world. So,
do you have a favorite joint?
Well, I'm a super big fan of the knee and the life.
You're a knee guy.
I love the lifespan of the knee, you know, from the young child early injuries from sports stuff to, you know, the adult athlete. And we're seeing things with, you know, the meniscus and the ACL and the balances of the different
ligaments.
It
seems like so much has happened. So many advances have been made about what can be done with the ACL, the meniscus, and the MCL and all those different
Absolutely.
Things that are happening in the knee. What are some of those things that are sort of been the really rocked your world as far as your profession?
Well, you know, it's a really great question, because the most exciting thing I think about ACLs that's happened in the last 2 years is becoming more mainstream is the classic teaching for ACL injuries. When you have a sports-related injury or the twisting injury with the pop and all of a sudden the knee swells up, it feels unstable. Generally speaking, our old standard has been, well, not everybody needs an ACL. So the people who play soccer and play basketball professionally, they have to have one. But everyone else, it's how unstable do you feel? If you've had this injury and the knee feels unstable, well, then we would fix it. And one of the things that we did surgically, classically, would be reconstruct it, or basically making tunnels in the bones, in the tibia and in the femur, and pulling a graft of tendon through there and letting the body reincorporate that and turn that into a ligament growing in from the bony edges. That's our classic way, and I still do a lot of that surgery. But one of the newest advances, which is really exciting, is the idea of being able to actually repair the ACL. One of the common injury patterns we see with skiers is the ACL will sometimes pull off the femoral wall, or the part of the thigh down in the knee.
But it'll actually pull away from the bone itself.
Pull directly off the bone. And so the rest of the ligament's doing well, but it's just not on its home anymore. And the newest techniques that we have for implants, I can actually put that back. And so people get to keep all of their own nerve fibers, and they call them proprioceptive fibers, or letting your body know where the knee is in space. And the recovery is faster. And it's remarkable. And one of the most exciting cases that was just written up was one of the Olympic athletes. She blew her ACL before one of the Olympic trials. And one of the doctors utilizes the same technique that I use. And he was able to get her not just back to sport, but back to competitive sport in a really small window, which used to be impossible. And
what is the technique? Is it a technique, or is it a specific technology that's changed, or both?
It's actually both. And so the technique is basically you have two options. You can either drill a tunnel through the femur and then pull the graft, or the actual tendon back into the wall and tension it into the bone. And then you lay something over the top of it that's called fiber tape, and it acts as an internal brace, which basically allows the body to heal without putting tension through the repair.
Wow.
And tech that we didn't have before. And the alternative way is if the ligament pulls directly off the femur, we can actually mount it in with anchors like we would for a rotator cuff or another place. And using the same internal brace construct creates stability that really allows that the part of the body to heal. And I think the reason we couldn't have done that 10 years ago is our anchor technology and our ability to deliver the injury back home to where it goes just wasn't available.
Wow, so, fascinating.
It's really exciting. I think it's right now for me, it's a subgroup of my ACL injuries. Some people, they still rupture the ACL right in the middle of it and it's kind of destroyed and there's nothing really to repair. But when we find that injury, we are able to repair it in a way that is really kind of exciting.
Yeah.
And one of the other cool things—
Give people their knee back in
absolutely.
A way. Yeah, right.
And get it back fast and get it back competitive if the people really did like sport, you know. And the other thing I think is really interesting is the diagnosis, the ability to diagnose different types of ACL injuries. That's also changed. And so before we've been really reliant on technology like MRI, which is good technology, and I use that a lot as well. But now we could do different techniques like in the office. We could do a microfiber optic arthroscopy and look at it and say, okay, this did come off the femoral wall. This is a candidate for repair, and I can prepare the patient that way as opposed to being like, well, we'll have to find out the time of surgery. You might get repaired. You might get reconstructed. We'll see how it goes. Mm. So that's also really improved what we can do with the knee. That's why the knee's pretty exciting.
Cool. Now, is there – you know, often we hear these – you'll hear reports about some new thing that people are into is causing some new injury. Are you seeing that at all in your field? I mean, I remember like the one I always think of is the bagel injury, right?
So the bagel slicer.
The bagel slicer, right? People, there was this rash of, that was like the most common thing in emergency rooms on Sunday mornings, right? Because everyone was cutting their bagels. So I remember that as a story. But is there anything like that? Is there a sport or is there some activity that's out there right now that you can think of where, oh boy, that's really death on ankles or really tough on other things?
There's always a couple of different little devices that will spur up usually around Christmas time.
Right? Sure.
As a gift, right? And then you know, grandma gave Johnny a pair of, right. you know, ice skates and he ate it.
So well, that weird roller thing that just you just stand on and it just rolls forward.
Yeah. There were some interesting injuries I heard from a friend out in San Francisco where have you seen the electronic skateboards that you get on?
Right. Yeah.
So
and they go. They really,
really,
move.
Really go. Yeah. And so, you know, there's some kids that were getting these high energy polytraumas where they're breaking their both legs and an arm because they're moving at the speed of a car, but they're standing on a skateboard, right?
That's on a skateboard.
There was a few of those injuries that I thought that were pretty remarkable. I did see a spell when I don't know if you remember those. I don't remember what the name of the device was, but there are those shoes with the skates and the heel.
The little kids were wearing them a lot.
The little wheelie things. Those things were people were having a lot of trouble and going
down backwards. I would think a lot. Yeah, well, right.
That and then when they go into stores, like they're hanging out with their family, and then they like eat it in a grocery store or something like that. So that's not good.
I would also think that I've almost been hit in the knees by kids in stores. Adult injury by being hit by
the
kid.
Yeah, it's a target-rich environment in the stores. You know, it's a big problem. I think that, there's certainly stuff like that.
And I guess, like, I'm sure when the lakes freeze, you must think, okay, boy, brace for a busy weekend. In a way, right?
It can be. Yeah. When we get a nice freeze or we get when the mountains open up. And, you know, one of the things that's really interesting, I used to downhill ski race when I was a younger guy, and I love skiing, and I spent a lot of time talking to skiing athletes and backcountry skiers and how to help them. And the most common thing they end up getting is usually it's ACL based on the way the binders work. But the other things that in terms of, you know, preparing skiers for the wintertime, there's a really amazing preseason workout that you could do. And they're called leg blasters, thigh blasters, and you can look them up. There's a
Maybe we'll put a link to that on the KTOO website, Juno Afternoon. I know Scott's listening. So leg blasters and
mini leg blasters.
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah. I remember the first time I watched the video of these people doing it. You start to watch the video, you're like, okay, I could do that, but they just keep going. I was just like, oh, they're not taking a break. That's some serious like staggered exercise.
And so it's all about building up strength, muscle strength that then allows for a lot of support of the ligaments.
Correct. Yeah, the muscles start to fire the right way when you're under strain and when you get fatigued. That's where you can really prevent injuries is that sort of endurance training and having a little bit of that preseason before you hit the slopes I think is fantastic.
Even for people who aren't necessarily athletes, is there a number one thing you would say about, look, if you really want to keep your joints healthy, you do this and you're doing yourself a big favor?
Like when people are working out in the gym, like people who go to the gym and they're just trying to stay fit and stuff for their legs, the one thing I recommend is doing closed chain exercises. So when we talk about the chain being closed, it really means having the foot mounted on a surface and not having it free in the air. And so there's a couple of machines that you sometimes see often in gyms where your foot is basically free in the air as you swing it, like a quad curl machine where the bar goes against your shins, or the one that does your hamstrings where it goes against the back of your leg. Those machines really load up the internal part of your knee as opposed to really getting into the full leg exercise.
I see.
So I tell people, and we talk to athletes a lot about closing the chain of their exercise. Make sure that when they're working on their legs that their foot's flat on a surface like a plate, like a squat or a leg press. And really don't go deeper than 90 degrees. Some people think that we really got to get into that really deep, like 120 degree flex. And that's where you can also put yourself at risk for an injury. And by doing those simple exercises, it's great. And sometimes when people are stuck in offices and they can't get time to get to the to go out and do a little bit of exercise for the legs, doing wall squats where you find a good wall and just go into a chair position and try to have a conversation that way.
Yeah, it's
a really great exercise. And doing it one splitting time between both legs and then one leg individually is a really terrific exercise.
If you're just joining us, we're talking to Dr. Charles David Hightower, who's an orthopedic surgeon that just came into Juneau in the last year, and getting a lot of advice from him about winterizing joints. Just a reminder that Juneau Afternoon is made possible with support from Sentinel Coffee, serving Southeast with locally roasted organic coffee. We're enjoying some right now. And door-to-door delivery, more at sentinelcoffee.com. And I wanted to ask you one more thing, which is that when you came in, I did the of course, annoying thing that I'm sure happens to every doctor, right? You're like, oh, orthopedic surgeon. Oh, I got a hip thing. Can you, hey, doc, can you take a look? So it made me ask the question we talked about a little bit. When you're talking to patients, how do you step through that diagnosis process? What's that process like for you?
For me, it's really about, I mean, it's really the conversation about starting about the onset. When did things happen? What happened? Explain to me the energy of what happened. Was it a big fall, a little fall, a twist, a twinge? All of that gives you the first hint about how much energy went through the body when this happened. And that can give you the first signs of, are we dealing with something that's potentially pulled off? Are we dealing with something that's maybe bruised or the soft tissue's not doing well? So onset's super important. And then after we have the kind of framework of that, I have them give me symptoms or describe to me when it's happening or how long it's happening, the duration of things, and when things are really – if they're happening all day long, are they feeling this with everything that they do, or are they just noticing it only when they do one thing? And that helps us figure out what structures might be turning on and turning off either appropriately or wrong to be able to cause the pain that they're having. And then when they go through things that people are avoiding, like what do you try not to do?
That's interesting, yeah.
You know, I don't – people say, I generally – look for things that don't have stairs.
That's that old joke, right?
Yeah.
It hurts when I do this. Well, don't do that.
Right? Well, exactly. Yeah, but the nice thing about like when you do that crazy thing is it tells you a lot about the mechanics of the body at that certain joint.
So that, like, yeah. So
it'll help hone us in.
Yeah, I'm having a hard time doing this or this. It's like, oh, okay, so that means you're not lifting or you're not pushing down or whatever that might be. Right.
And one of the things that we were talking about is this idea of sports-related pain around the hip. And the hip is a really exciting joint too. And the things that are interesting is when people feel pain that's on the outside of the body that they can almost pinpoint, that usually is not the hip joint. The hip joint itself is pretty far forward up in the groin. And so when people are noticing pains when they're getting in and out of a deep-seated truck or car, or they really are having more difficulty when they're going on stairs and their knees are coming up into flexion, their hips flexing, those people tend to bring my attention more toward the hip joint. But when people are describing it's right here and they're kind of motioning to the outside of their hip.
Mm-hmm, yeah, and that's what I was doing.
Exactly,
right.
Then we're starting to think about those structures that are external to the joint, and those tend to be either muscular or tendon or the relationship between the two. And that really can help kind of drive where our conversation goes about how to get you better. People with joint pathology, I think it's more of a question of do we have a process in the joint that's really causing our issue? Is there a joint reactive process? Is there an injury to the labrum that surrounds the hip joint that keeps it stable, or the capsule, or the cartilage has a rough spot where it's engaging like Velcro, versus when we're kind of focusing on those external muscles and how do we coordinate them better, or what interventions can we do external to the joint to make it feel better and walk better?
Well, thanks so much. It's been really a pleasure talking to you. Welcome. I know you've been here a little while, but welcome to Juneau formally and permanently.
Yeah,
and
thank you.
We're really pleased to have you here. Dr. Charles David Hightower, orthopedic surgeon that is now living here and has a practice in Juneau. Thanks so much for letting us know all about how to winterize our joints. Much appreciated.
Thanks a lot.
Okay.